Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. My name is Nick English and this week I am joined by features writer Mohammed Butt. Hello Mo.
Hi there Nick, how you doing?
I'm good, I'm very good. I've just noticed you're wearing a jumper and it's absurdly warm in here.
Well, it's not really a thick jumper, it's quite thin.
Okay, that's good. Also joining us, features editor Greg Johnson.
How you doing, Nick?
Good.
Yeah. I'm wearing a t-shirt and I'm absolutely sweltering, so...
It's good. Okay, let's not dwell on it. Also joining us, James McManus, social media director. Hello, James.
Hello. I'm an appropriate temperature.
No, that's good. Fantastic. Okay, let's get straight into it. And we've got to start off by talking a little bit about the absurd scenes as Leicester beat Everton 3-1 to put the cherry on the cake and lifted the Premier League title. What a joyous day it was, Greg.
It was... They had Andrea Bocelli. They had medals for children. It was just amazing. It was everything you wanted it to be, really. I think they said in Match of the Day this week, like, usually lifting the title, the actual ceremony is a bit like, it's just an afterthought. This is like an event. Yeah. Everyone tuned in. It was beautiful.
Yeah,
the highlight of the season for me. Forget the football. Yeah. That was it. It was just, there were doves crying and...
Doves crying.
Doves crying, yeah. In honour of Prince. Yeah. We lost him this year.
So. Yeah, no, that's a good shout. Leicester City, Leicester's A&E actually reported that twice as many incidents, which is kind of to be expected.
What were the incidents, sorry?
Twice as many casualties. They were turning people away from A&E because there were so many people
drunk
injured.
Drunk celebrations.
Right. It wasn't like, I don't know.
No. It's not an American team winning a hockey tournament, no.
Yeah, learn to celebrate. That's
a hockey tournament. Yeah. What we do need to talk about, though, is Leicester win the title. What now? What next for Leicester? James, I'll come to you first. What do they need to do in the summer transfer market? According to Repucom, in a report they published last week, they will earn a £150 million boost from this incredible title win. What do they need to be spending on? What's going to be their approach for the off-season?
I think this season they were quite benefited by going out of both domestic cups pretty early on. They were out of the League Cup and the FA Cup by mid-January. Mm. Only reached the third and the fourth round. So they've just been able to focus on the league. But you're going to dump fit like 10 more games, a lot more travelling on top of that next season. Mm. So they need probably, as much as it's a bit of a cliche to say, they do need to pad their squad out quite a bit. Mm. And while their back four has been superb this season, Wes Morgan's 32, Robert Hoof's 32 this summer, Simpson's 29, and Christian Fuchs is 30. So they could do a bit more youth at the back. Mm. They could rotate as well. And also, I've been thinking, like, where is... Because Benteke's leaving Liverpool, isn't he? He's definitely off, but where would he suit? And I think Leicester Benteke is a pretty good fit.
Very good shout.
That's a good
and he'd want team to move. Villa were meant to be.
He'd want to go there for Champions League football as well.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Mo, what do you reckon Leicester's approach to the transfer market should be? I mean, obviously they need to pad out their squad, but do they need to make a couple of, replacements? Do they need to be worried about people leaving?
I mean, Riyad Mahrez... I mean, I'd be amazed if they managed to hold on to him over the summer. Jamie Vardy and N'Golo Kante might be a bit easier. Kante is a defensive midfielder, not necessarily a fashionable player. And Vardy is 29 and English and pretty much in the best place, really, he's ever going to be. But Mahrez, I think, PSG, maybe even more fashionable because Barcelona might be like, this guy's pretty good. Take a peek at him. But regarding who they should buy, I mean, Maka's absolutely right, but they need some defensive backups. I think they need a whole new midfield as well. Three out of four midfielders. Because they just need more quality in there. Dane Drinkwater, great performer, did really well in the Premier League. He's not going to cut it against Europe's best.
You need a ball player, don't they?
Yeah, they need a ball player midfielder. They need a better left winger than Mark Albrighton. Mark Albrighton did brilliantly this season, but you're going to the Champions League, you're going to be playing three games a week, very little time to actually train, mostly just rest days and match prep. It's going to be a entirely different challenge for Leicester, and they really need to avoid the pitfalls that Celta Vigo, for example, suffered.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, obviously, Leicester, we've been talking about it all season, how hardworking they are. They've got role players. They've managed to avoid injuries. Is it going to be quite easy for Ranieri to actually, back up his squad or make those key, replacements, for example, a better ball-playing midfielder for Danny Drinkwater or maybe another commanding centre-back to potentially phase out Robert Huth? Is it going to be quite easy for them in the transfer market, do you reckon?
No, it's going to be incredibly difficult.
Right. Why is that?
Well, I think you look at what's made them great this season. You've alluded to it there with hard work and teamwork, but it's also intensity and just the sheer focus of how they've played. They've used the least amount of players. I think they're actually the least shuffled kind of title winners of however many years that have gone by.
Well, they made 27 changes to their starting 11 this season.
That continuity is part of what's made the great. And Macca's completely right in terms of the less games they've played compared to other title contenders. And I also think, look at players like Riyad Mahrez. I think for his sake, he should leave. Now, this season's probably the best he's ever going to be. You look at his numbers. He was successful with 79% of his through balls, and that's a ridiculously unsustainable figure. Messi gets about 42%, and he's the best player in the world. So I think this is a one-off season for Mahrez, a one-off season for a lot of their players. As much as I hate to say it, I think Leicester are really going to struggle to repeat what they've done, as everyone knows they will, because this season was incredible. It was literally a one-off, I think. And the question is, are their qualities scalable? I think they could be competitive in the Champions League, but I'm not sure you can take what they've done to another level, because that kind of takes away what it is that they've done. I mean, even their analysts and their coaches, they share a staff room and an office. Other big clubs, each of these departments have their own kind of whole floor in some places. And I think if you start building this kind of huge infrastructure at the back, it almost takes away from what made them great this season, which is like this intimacy of people working on top of each other, the intensity that comes with that, the continuity of it. I think if you start trying to push that into another level, you're going to lose the magic. And yeah, hate to say it, I don't think they're going to be able to build on what they've
done. I think out
of
the three, though, I think Kante is probably the one that will be off. I can see Mahrez and Vardy staying. Vardy, obviously, because of his age, and I think he probably just loves it there.
Yeah.
And I think Mahrez will give it a year, one more year. He'll get itchy feet around January next year, and then he'll be off next summer. But Kante, I think every top Premier League club's going to want to...
Arsenal are allegedly massively interested.
Yeah, Arsenal, Chelsea as well. Matic has been disappointing.
Would fit anywhere as well. Yeah. Any team could do a Kante. I mean, what is
Man
it?
Man United, Steve Walsh? He could be good at Man
massively.
United.
He's a player that Schneiderlin should have been. Yeah. But what did Steve Walsh say in the title celebrations? He said, people say we have a two-man midfield. I say we have three. We have Drinkwater, Holding, and then Kante either side. I mean, that sums up what he is and what he does. He's just an incredible player.
Kante could, this is much of an exaggeration, he could literally play for almost every side in the world. Maybe not Bayern Munich, maybe not Barcelona.
Give it a go.
He'd fight to get in those sides. He's so good, it's kind of ridiculous. And he's probably going to go to the Euros. He might, if he has a good tournament. He scored in his France debut, didn't he? So if he has a good tournament, I think Macca has a point there. But I mean, Vardy, I think, is pretty much going to stay. He's got Champions League football. He's the hero there. He's not going to find a better situation. Mahrez and Kante, if they lose those two, I mean, it was those three that powered them to the title. So
let me ask a different question. What should Leicester's goal be next season? Ranieri's been clear in sort of tempering expectations. What should their goal be? I mean, obviously, getting back into the Champions League is the big one, because that ensures sort of...
Top six, I'd say. Top six.
Yeah?
They've got a budget that they can break through now. They've got the status that they can break through now. Not to bring it back to a social media type point, on the start of the season, they had about 500,000 likes on Facebook, and now they've got 3 million.
Yeah.
So they're just so much more well-known around the world, around Europe. They've got to use that to their advantage. They've got pedigree now, haven't they? Yeah. So I'd say top six.
I think on that point, on the social media kind of draw of Leicester, you saw the scenes when they won the title in Thailand. They got a big entry into a huge market in the Far East, and that's why I think they have to retain Champions League football this season. Because as much as I say that their approach at the moment isn't scalable, they can continue to get Champions League football and become a big team in Asia. That gives you a huge pool of potential money coming through merchandise and other things like that. And then they almost don't have to play at Leicester. They can actually mature into becoming almost a boringly, normal, competent Big Four side. I mean, their owners are in Thailand. They clearly know the market. They've done some amazing stuff this season with how they've interacted between communities of fans over there and here. So I think that's the route forward. They've got to do everything to keep the top four this year and then just build from there.
I think, honestly, I'll be more restrained than them. I think just top 10. Honestly, they will. It's such an romantic notion, fight for the Champions League, fight for the top six. It's going to be such a huge challenge for them to cope with Champions League football and Premier League football at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the Premier League, I mean, and you know, with all due respect, Premier League's going to take a big jump in quality next year with the additions of Pep Guardiola, Antonio Conte, and probably Jose Mourinho, although who the hell knows.
And a lot of money is going to be spent.
A lot of money, a lot of quality. Yeah. And I mean, look, going back to Celta Vigo, in 2002 and 2003, they finished fourth in La Liga, got to the Champions League, and they prioritised the Champions League because they wanted to make a statement. And they reached the round of 16, got knocked out by Arsenal. But then their La Liga form suffered massively, and they got relegated. And that side, which had Berizzo, Mostovoy, Edu, Catania, some really good players. Great players got stripped, and then the Celta have never really been the same. And it's just that's the fear I have for Leicester, because it's if you aim let's say we're going to go for the Champions League and make a statement in the Champions League, then your league form is going to suffer. And, it, you know, I just worry for Leicester.
100%, 100%.
Well, it's obviously an incredible situation. Nobody saw it happening. And obviously, as you've heard a million times, the bookmakers had it at 5,000 to 1. I talked to David Sumpter, author of Soccermatics, a little bit more about what those odds meant and if they actually had any credence whatsoever. You talk in several chapters about anomalies in football, you know, sort of explaining these anomalies. I think one of the biggest anomalies in football, if not the biggest ever, has happened this week in terms of Leicester City winning the title.
Yeah.
How does this rank in terms of anomalies? How do you account for this, either, you know, in terms of, you know, as a statistical anomaly?
Mm.
And what is the likelihood of this being able to be replicated?
Yeah, so I haven't done the exact calculation, but the bookmakers who set 1 in 5,000, I don't know what they were thinking. That was a very, very bad estimate. That says that once every 5,000 years, you would expect a team to, like Leicester, to win the league. And of course, they're going to win more often. Something like that is going to happen more often than that. That was a very bad estimate. I'd say that it's, yeah, now I'm just taking the magic out of Leicester's victory, but but I would say it's a 1 in 100 type of event.
Mm-hmm.
But also what I say in the book, because I talk a little bit about Messi and how he's basically a once in a lifetime player when mm-hmm. he scored 50 goals in La Liga in a season. This was unheard of. And although there are players who are up there just now, I think Suarez is up there. He's not near 50, and I don't think he's going to get 50 this season. So these things do happen, but there's also this concept of this game changer thing. So when you have an event like Messi or Leicester, it's very possible that they've actually changed what's going to happen. And next season, we'll see maybe Leicester do it again, or we'll see another team do it again. So I certainly wouldn't go for 1 in 100 either now. Now we've seen it happen, we know that there's a better chance that it can happen again.
That was David Sumpter talking a little bit about the anomalies that you get in football. Let's talk a little bit about the race for fourth. What have City done? What have City done, Mo?
Tooled it.
They bottled it.
Completely. It's just ridiculous. It's almost like Pellegrini's like, you know what? I don't really like Pep Guardiola. To hell with that guy. And they've just been absolutely throwing it away in the league, and they've put all their eggs in the Champions League basket, which Real Madrid promptly kicked over and smashed all the eggs.
There you go. That was so Partridge at the end, and smashed all the eggs.
All the eggs are broken.
Needless to say, I had the last egg.
Full on matter face.
That was incredible. No, seriously, Greg, what have City done? They've completely. I mean, it seems like Spurs, City, and Arsenal are all trying to outbottle each other. I mean, none of them have got any steel. If there was a game that was representative of why two teams didn't win the league, it was that Man City Arsenal game. I mean, porous defenses, no spirit. Some lovely interplay at times and some great individualism, but no team collective spirit whatsoever.
Mm. I said in the office, this is more Partridge coming out right now. I said in the office last week, it's like two heavyweights that can't actually beat heavyweights fighting each other.
Right.
Just like, you know,
yeah.
Just they got no actual punches, they're just big lads. That guy that David Haye broke his fist on, the Russian bloke, like 8 foot.
Yeah,
basically
yeah.
Him. You can't do any extra boxing. Yeah. Like, oh. That's all they are. They're just two big value evs struggling to know where they are in the Premier League.
James, this is going to be City's worst points tally since 2009-10, which was a bit of a disastrous season. It was when Mark Hughes was sacked halfway through. This has been a bit of a disaster this season. I mean, I know they got to a Champions League semi-final, but they went out in possibly the most meek fashion imaginable.
Yeah, they didn't even turn up for that game. It was bizarre.
It was strange.
They didn't really know it was like... It's like they thought they had another game, a mystery third leg, put it back.
Didn't
that neutral venue or something?
Didn't Pellegrini do that 2 years ago? Like he got his maths wrong in the group stage, so maybe that did actually happen.
It was so strange. Madrid were not. I'm not saying they were there for the taking, but they weren't at it. And City were even less at it.
Mm.
It was the biggest game of a lot of their players, like those players' careers, and they just didn't turn up. They've got so many substandard players in that 11. Fernando's not good enough for Man City. Jesus Navas isn't good enough for Man City. Clichy's not good enough for Man City anymore. Otamendi is like okay with the right partner, but it's not Mangala, is it?
No.
And Aguero needs a dominant centre forward. And Iheanacho is great, but I think he could do a year away, maybe like a club like West Brom, rather than being dropped in and out of the team.
Mm.
So you're probably looking at starting 11. You've really got De Bruyne, Silva, Aguero, Hart, and
Company.
And Fernandinho. I don't think you can even rely on Company.
No,
he needs replacing.
No.
You can't build a back four around this very talented centre half that's never there. It doesn't make sense.
He's going to miss the Euros, isn't he?
He's out for 4 months.
A quick note on Yaya Touré. He's only scored more than 6 goals in a league season twice. He's got 6 goals this season. Well, those last 2 years standouts, and now he's just reverted to the mean? I mean, I know he's playing deeper when he was at Barca, but...
It's difficult to say with Yaya, because I think a lot of the thing he's 34. He's not a young man.
So
I think,
true.
I think it was a combination of he got to play further forward, he got restricted, he got freed by Fernandinho and Fernando, and he just went wild, basically. And I think Aguero being out a lot in 13-14 was really good for him. I think Dzeko is a more able partner to play one up front and play and work with Yaya Toure in that sense. And I just thought it was so notable against Real Madrid that Aguero was just rubbish over both legs, just utterly incapable of playing up front by himself. He has none of the physical stature you need to do that. They should have played Iheanacho, honestly. He would have been better for them than Aguero. Mm. Iheanacho with De Bruyne behind him. There was so much space in the second leg because Casemiro was injured. And they just didn't take advantage of it. But they've just had such a bad season. They've only, on three occasions, managed to win consecutive Premier League games. Otherwise, they've just not managed. It's just ridiculous. They won five in a row to start the season. They won two in October. And they won three in April. But other than that, they've never actually managed to win more than one game in a row.
Yeah, total lack of consistency, isn't it?
It just goes back to like what a poor signing Wilfred Bony was. Like,
awful.
Like, I never thought it was a good fit. The logic was, oh, you get a guy who scored 15 goals at a mid-table team, stick him in a better team, he'll score 20 goals. Yeah. But his chance conversion rate was around 14%. So it's because he's having 8 shots a game playing for Swansea, because teams are a little bit more open against Swansea. Mm. You're not getting that time and space for City. You're getting 3 shots a game, and teams are putting like players behind the ball, and he's snatching at chances. He's not that great a finisher, and it was just bound to happen this way. He should be the big man that Aguero feeds off.
Mm.
But you need like a Drogba type character, really good in big games, 15 goals a season. That should be what Wilfred Bony's doing, but he's just not good enough for him.
That's fair enough.
I think it's funny that, you know, the two big matches recently for City that kind of showed their weaknesses have been Arsenal and Real Madrid, because City are kind of a team that's the worst parts of both those clubs together. So they've got all these big individuals, but unlike Real Madrid, they don't let the individualism kind of take them to the top. Like, it just seems like they're all fair weather players, and sometimes it clicks, but they never quite complement each other, and they never seem to go on a run together. It's always one standout guy or nothing, and it just falls apart. But they never quite get the kind of collective rhythm that Arsenal get either. And it'll be really interesting to see with Pep coming in, because obviously he's a system manager, but City have almost got... They clearly want that kind of Barcelona style of play, and, you know, Barcelona style of play. but for all the Manx out there. But they just, I don't know, I don't know if it's because they're buying all these individuals because they've got FPP regulations rather than a squad, but it just never quite, I think, as Maka says, like the quality overall just isn't there, and it just, they never quite get to the point where they probably should be without the money they're spending.
Oh yeah,
they smother people rather than bring the best out of them.
Yeah,
their
they need
players.
A massive overhaul in the summer. There's maybe a handful of players that you would keep in that squad that will be. I mean, he may be forced to keep some because of FFP and whatever, but they need so many players.
But even then, they've had overhauls in the past, and the structural problems have remained. They've won a title, and then after they have to follow up. They just seem to be a side kind of have a weird hollowness to them.
Yeah, but that's why they need someone like Pep Guardiola, who's going to insist on there being some structure to the restructuring. It's not he's not going to be signing players willy nilly. He's going to make sure that there's actually a purpose put into the club.
We'll have to see.
United beating Norwich with a late Juan Mata goal, and Spurs, City obviously dropping points, means that it's now in United's grasp. If they win their next two games, they will have Champions League football next season. And Pep Guardiola will be slugging it out in the Europa League, which is...
Schlepping
it in the Europa League. James, this United team, Champions League football, that would be... pretty amazing, wouldn't it?
It's just another year of Van Gaal. I think it's definitely going to happen. I think United are going to win the FA Cup. I still think United will somehow trip up and finish fifth.
Yeah.
But I think that'll be enough for Van Gaal to stay.
Yeah.
I think the board's pretty split on Mourinho. Why were the rumours so strong in February and they've just completely died down now?
Mm. Yeah.
That's why the Mourinho to PSG link came out of nowhere. That's definitely... Mourinho's people going, yeah, go on, United, he's here.
Yeah, yeah.
just to remind you, he's not up to much these evenings.
It's a really good point, because it shows the fractious nature of what's going on behind the scenes at United, which has led to a lot of the problems that they've got right now.
It's not even like anyone's had to come out and give Van Gaal a vote of confidence or anything like that. It's just sort of drifting towards, yeah, all right, I guess we're keeping him for another year. It's a strange situation. There's been no firm committal either way. It was basically all built around... Van Gaal winning the FA Cup. It reminds me a bit of when Doug Leash was at Liverpool and reached the Carling Cup and FA Cup finals. if Liverpool had won the FA Cup, the Carling Cup was a couple months earlier, but the league form was completely collapsing. Mm-hmm. Lost to Chelsea 2-1 in the final, the FA Cup. And if Liverpool had won that, you could see that they'd have probably couldn't really sack him, even though they kind of wanted to, because he won both domestic cups. Yeah. But lost that final, it was a bit like they went, oh, okay, well, Rodgers is available, Martinez is available, let's try and get a bright new young manager in. It's kind of a similar situation United are having now.
It's a real... it's my great fear, what Mac is saying, basically, that they
Your
don't...
great
get,
fear.
That they don't get rid of Van Gaal.
In life.
In life. I mean, you know, he's just completely and utterly... He's taken the club as far as he can, Van Gaal. He did that in September, frankly. But, I mean, he had to stay on. He had to give us the gift of Marcus Rashford and Timothy Fosu-Mensa. So, fine, okay. But...
Hang on. The gift. What's going on here?
He had to play them, you know, because no one else would have played an 18-year-old like Marcus Rashford in that game. They would have... Put like Juan Mata up front or something, a false nine.
Most of them would have played Anthony Martial up front.
Well, no, he was injured against Midtjylland.
Without wanting to state the obvious.
Against Midtjylland, when Anthony Martial went out, most managers would have stuck Juan Mata in a false nine. He was like, no, go on, kid. Yeah, well,
it's what Chelsea did when their strikers went out. It's like, Hazard, do you want to play as a striker? We've got all these kids in the academy scoring loads of goals at UEFA. Yeah. No.
Is this going to be the worst team, the worst Premier League side to qualify for the Champions League that we can remember? I mean, they're not great.
Not by a long shot. No.
There's the Everton one that got there with Marcus Bent playing up front. Yeah. That was a pretty poor side. Also, it was a really organised side, but Marcus Bent playing. Yeah. I know they went out before the groups, but...
Yeah. No, but there's going
to
be
some ludicrous refereeing decisions, it's worth mentioning, thanks to Pierluigi Curlino.
To Manuel Pellegrini's Villarreal.
Interestingly.
But yes, no, it's not going to be, because, I mean, if it as constituted, it would be one of the worst. But it won't be, because there'll be so much work done in the summer. You know, they've just got piles of cash and they're throwing them all over the place at Europe. Renato Sanchez, you know, there'll be a striker coming in of some kind. It's, you know, there'll be money spent to make this team actually not terrible.
Greg's shaking his head so much.
I don't understand
much.
How this United team are even anywhere near the bracket of the worst. I mean, the potential of this side is huge. I mean, a lot of the reason why we haven't been great is because, again, it's almost like City. There's a lack of rhythm rather than a lack of quality. I think we get the right manager in. I think Van Gaal's done a great job as like the renovator, but he's not the man to take them to their peak, I don't think.
Just to play devil's advocate, if you look at the team as a whole during the season, I mean, they've produced some pretty insipid football and some woeful performances.
Yeah.
You know? And this has been a poor quality league. You know, everyone's saying that it should have been City or Arsenal season, but it's been a pretty...
Arsenal more boring to watch than Man United.
Well, Arsenal have been boring recently.
They're hideous to watch. They can just go. You can prattle on about this much vaunted style of play all you want, but if it's just producing the sort of performances Arsenal have been turning out for the last month and a half, then that's more boring to me than anything Van Gaal's United have done.
A lot of Arsenal fans have been saying exactly that, actually.
Can I just say, I think it would be peak Van Gaal, though, for us to go and smash West Ham and then lose 5-1 to Bournemouth on the last day of the season and go fifth.
I think interestingly, United and Arsenal are both quite predictable. That's why they're quite boring. Like, Wenger just plays 4-2-3-1 regardless of the team or opposition. And United just play the exact same style of play regardless of the team or opposition. That's why Klopp's Liverpool are fun to watch, because he changes things about. He drops players, he tries new systems.
There's also
we'll sit back one game, we'll press high the next.
There's also real momentum when Klopp's teams play. There's energy. It sounds so cliche, but the players really look like they care.
It's reflected by their manager, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and you look. I mean, yeah, that's a great example. On Thursday after the goal, when Klopp's like going crazy with the fans, chilling to cheer up, and then you compare it to Man United and Van Gaal sitting there writing things in his notebook. And I mean, you know, it's kind of reductive and sort of like maybe almost simplistic to say, but I think it makes
helps create an atmosphere inside the stadium. Like, everyone was saying after the Liverpool game against Villarreal, that Klopp was taking like a bit too much attention away from the players by going and celebrating in front of fans, but that's what created the atmosphere
for
all this run, him doing simple things like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everyone mocked the players when they went over to the Kop End. After
the
West Brom draw, 2-2, saying, what are they doing? But it's that's the roots
that was so clever.
What you're getting now is that bond with the fans.
That was so clever.
I think that is why I don't like the idea of United's team this year being bad. I think that's what they lack momentum. That's what we're missing. The actual team, I think, even on paper with the kids, is very good. It's just we're an omni-shambles of a club at the moment. We talked about the board earlier. We've got two boards and three different factions. I mean, that's like square pegs, round holes all over the place.
It's Game of Thrones at Old Trafford.
It is. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Game of Trafford.
So I just, they need to sort things out. But, if anyone's going to get us through, it's going to be Rashford. That's going to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We've been focusing on the west of the country. Let's focus on the east and the relegation battle. Norwich, Sunderland and Newcastle. That's literally the only link I could find between
three
clubs.
That was a nice segue,
I have to say. That they're in the east of the country.
That was good.
Rafa sorted out the defence, but he was never going to save that attack, was he? Actually, a quick stat. Newcastle without Benitez, 1.89 goals conceded per game. Then when, since he's come in, 1.2 goals conceded per game. But crucially, Newcastle without Benitez, one goal scored per game. 1.22 goals scored per game with Benitez. Needed to improve the attack more, didn't they?
Yeah, but he's kind of done exactly what I thought he'd do, and I thought it'd be enough. He's kind of made them... a bit of sobriety to Newcastle United. They're just like
sobriety.
Yeah, as in they're not.
No one's punching a horse. So
exactly. Whereas Sunderland have gone the exact other way, and they've just kind of gone with the chaos. Sam's gone, I'm not going to get clean sheets, so I'm going to get Jermaine Defoe in, and we're just going to score more goals on the other side. And it's worked. He's bought into the chaos. And it's just
Sam Allardyce has been saying since January that his team's performances are excellent, and they just keep getting unlucky. We've seen that in the last five or six games. He was actually right. They've been playing brilliantly.
Yeah, they're just to loop in Norwich as well. Since that 5-4 loss to Liverpool in the last minute, Norwich have picked up 8 points. Mm. And that was on January 23rd, I think.
Wow.
And Sunderland have picked up 8 points in the last four games.
Yeah.
And they've come against Chelsea, Stoke, and Arsenal and Norwich. So they have the big mo, don't they? They have the big mo.
Yeah, last time I was on the pod, one of the last times, I jokingly said Big Sam's going to make it rain. Yeah, I was messing around, but
rain.
He actually has.
He has.
Since I said that, they've won. They whooped the life out of Norwich. They planked Arsenal. They held Stoke, and they just beat Chelsea.
Yeah.
They came
from behind against Chelsea.
Scored
as
seven
well.
Goals in that run. Conceded 28 chances created. I mean, they're doing the business. They're a good. They're a really good side, and they're going to play Everton next.
And yeah,
and that's basically a free win
at this point. That's a gimme.
I mean, it's looking like they're going to stay up, and that's bad news for Newcastle, unfortunately.
Though. Greg, a word about Allardyce, because it was actually his. You know, he likes to take credit for wins, but his tactical changes made a big difference. He brought on Duncan Watmore on the left, which added a bit of pace, which really had Ivanovic panicked.
Mm.
And also, he took off Lee Cattermole when they equalised, which turned out to be an absolutely crucial decision because he looked like he was going to get sent off.
Yeah,
big time management from Big Sam.
Yeah, it's like bottom one just over again. I don't mean that reductively either. Like, back when he had like players that were options off the bench,
they finished fifth, man.
Yeah, he actually knows. Big Sam, when he's got the players, knows how to use them. He's a very underrated manager. I mean, obviously, he gets a lot of stick for his style and stuff. But at the same time, we were saying earlier about how Pellegrini and the players are suffering at City because that's culture. Got to remember, this is Sunderland. This isn't a great escape. This is a way of life. They do this every year. So, like, Big Sam, he's almost like he's the perfect manager for the club with the perfect.
Newcastle
kind
have
of...
ever got out of it either. There's never been that great escape for them, where Sunderland know they kind of do it.
Heavy footing in the mud, sinking. Whereas Sunderland a bit more light on the feet. They know they're probably going to go down, but they're just going to keep skirting around.
To be honest, you know what? If you swap Jermaine Defoe and Alexander Mitrovic, I reckon Newcastle would have stayed up.
Yeah,
Jermaine Defoe is such an underrated goal scorer in the Premier League.
You're not going to stay up with Papi Cisse up front, are you? It's just not possible.
Well, I think Big Sam would turn him into.
I just think Newcastle they just dilly dallied a bit much with a dead man walking, didn't they, with McLaren for too long. They should have got rid of McLaren after they lost 3-0 away at Everton. Or even after they lost 5-1 away at Chelsea. And it's crucial games, like they lost 3-2 away to Norwich, equalised twice, and then Norwich get a 93rd minute winner. And like after the Chelsea game, when McLaren definitely should have gone, and they lost 3-1 at home to Bournemouth after the weekend after that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these crucial moments. If they'd have got Rafa in earlier, they'd be...
Undoubtedly.
The Sunderland are in better shape because Allardyce has had like 4 months extra with his players. Where results weren't of paramount importance, it was just getting things ready.
A quick note about Norwich. Obviously, they've been woeful, as James pointed out, since January. Sebastian Bassong, in particular, looked nervy from the start. I was actually listening to the game on 5 Live, and Stuart Pearce said it from minute, I think, 5. Said Bassong looks a bit ropey. Greg, they just didn't sign enough defenders, did they?
No.
They never reinforced that defence properly.
No, they spent a fair amount of money, but they just
35 million they spent.
Yeah.
Where's it gone?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, we did a bit of Alan Partridge earlier, and they are Alan Partridge's team, so you've got to say they're almost a canary down the mineshaft for promoted teams. As in, you can spend money, but it's got to be the right spending. Look at Leicester. Scout your players, get it right. Norwich, it's just been a bit confused almost. It's
uninspiring signings. Yeah. Like Graham Dorans is such a bottom three player.
Yeah.
He's just got it written all over him. Clubs always seem to avoid a relegation battle, sign players that have been in past relegation battles. What's the logic? What in any other job is that applicable?
It's like Ian Dowie, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bring Ian Dowie in.
Better players, not ones who have like past experience of failure. Don't sign them.
Get Yam Envia. Yeah,
there you go.
Yannick Villa's been excellent.
He has been excellent.
He was linked with Arsenal for years, and Arsenal like, nah, you're all right for some reason. and
Sunderland sounds
were,
like them.
And Sunderland were like, you know what? He's playing in Moscow because everyone thinks he's a jerk or whatever. So you know what? Hey, come here. We'll play for us. He's incredible. He should be in a Champions League side. Really, yeah. He's that good.
Norwich's top scorer this season is joint. It's Mbakani and Redmond with 5 league goals.
Yeah.
So and they've got 11 points in their last 17 Premier League games.
Yeah.
Only Villa and Watford have scored fewer goals in 2016 than Norwich, who's got 13 goals. They're just dreadful. They don't. I look at it as a wider thing as well. They don't really contribute anything to the league, I don't think. they're just there. Sunderland and Newcastle. Sunderland and Newcastle absolutely do, because there's a historical significance there, and they've geographically it's good to have a powerhouse in
Norwich
that part
did
of
give
the,
us Delia Smith
of the country.
Yeah.
They're just a nice family championship club, so just stay there.
And those clubs have no place in the Premier League. That's the
nice family.
It's like the fourth time they've come up, and they've done nothing every time.
Yeah, it's all a bit Reading, isn't it?
Yeah, just give it a go or don't bother, guys.
Well, Norwich fans, complaints on a postcard. James will reply to all of those.
I will, absolutely. Yes.
He will. Let's fly over to Spain. Which airline today? Virgin. let's fly over to Spain.
Don't they only do the Atlantic?
Let's look at the details. title race developments. Atletico are out of the La Liga title race. Surprise loss to Levante. Real Madrid got a huge win against Valencia. And Barca just swatted aside Espanyol 5-0. Looks like they've got it in the bag. Mo, thoughts on the La Liga title race? Oh. Your eyes have just lit up.
I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready to go. No. The Atletico Madrid loss was unfortunate, but almost you could almost see it coming. Levante got relegated the week before, and they played with absolutely no fear. They were just not afraid of Atletico Madrid because you can't get more relegated.
Atletico went.
So, you know, they just flew at them from minute one. They went 1-0 down to Fernando Torres. Really nice goal.
Lovely turn of phrase.
And they just absolutely just flew at them all game long.
Yeah.
And just Atletico were tired. They'd been through a grueling semi-final against Bayern Munich after a grueling semi-final against a quarter-final against Barcelona. They didn't have Diego Godin. He was rested after with his injury. Griezmann didn't start the game. Carrasco didn't start the game, and you know they just their midfield, their Saul, Koke, Gabby, and Augusto just looked exhausted. They couldn't raise their game to dominate an opponent who was really like, you know what, we're going to take you down.
Are they totally focused on the Champions League?
I think they are. I think they've clearly prioritized that. They're gonna think, okay, you know what, let's just.
Because there's scars from that Real Madrid game.
I mean, the last two times in the Champions League, the team that has eliminated them is Real Madrid. They did it in the final, obviously, dramatically, and they did it last year in the quarterfinal. So there's payback there. You know, they'll want to do that. And it was always unlikely for them to win La Liga anyway because they don't have the head-to-head advantage over Barcelona. They lost both games 2-1. So,
in their tie with Bayern Munich earlier in the semi-finals, wasn't it? Pep Guardiola said that the greatest compliment I can pay to Diego Simeone is that him and Atletico are not at the same level as Barcelona and Real Madrid. They're kind of not. They have to win. I think they have to win a Champions League. They have to actually win one to actually break that glass ceiling and be up there. So I completely understand why they're throwing everything out. They've already got a league title under Diego Simeone. Yeah. People said they'd never do it again. But getting the Champions League, that's you said cherries on the top of the cake. This is the icing on the cake. This would be the
icing before the cherry.
It is. The cherry will be the I don't know where we're going with this. But,
it's a cherry icing sparklers. The whole world.
The sparklers, the sprinkles.
Yeah.
James, there was a curious moment at the Bernabeu during Real Madrid's 3-2 win where fan favorite James Rodriguez attempted a Rabona cross which went to no one and got a standing ovation. Bit of an odd club, but as an aside, it's a great result for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, James Rodriguez is a fan favourite, isn't he? Same with Isco, and they've kind of both been marginalised a bit under Zidane, which is something you didn't really expect to happen. Yeah. He thought he'd like creative players.
Yeah, he'd like a number 10.
And them, but he's just gone with Bale, Benzema and Cristiano Ronaldo. Rightly so, they are the three best. I'm not going to knock that decision too much, but you've seen Barcelona definitely have the advantage of not having that midweek football at the moment. They've won their last four games by an aggregate score of 21-0. So they're just having that little bit extra rest because they did look absolutely dead for a bit. They were just absolutely cream crackered, weren't they?
Yeah, that was the first time since they came together that all three of the MSN went away on international duty before because Suarez was banned for the whole time. So he always remained in Barcelona. All three of them went on international duty, and Messi never. Messi, it's like going to war. Messi never comes back the same playing for Argentina. He always needs like a month to recover after this.
You weren't there, man.
The scars of
Neymar's been left out of the Copa America and the Olympic squads.
No, he's left out of the He's playing the Olympics.
Is he playing the
left
Olympics?
Left out of the Copa as a result because Barca didn't want him to basically be playing football all summer.
He's like, he hasn't had a summer off since 2011, is it? The last one.
But the Olympics are big. It's the only tournament they've never won.
Yeah, exactly. And it's in Rio as well, so he'll be dying to win that one. So, yeah, and then next season, I mean, this is what I've been saying.
Suarez is going to play at the Copa as well. They're just going to be knackered again.
Yeah, no, that's what they need to sign a forward in the summer. Yeah. Hatem Ben Arfa, maybe not Hatem Ben Arfa, maybe someone like, you know, more like, I mean, Kevin Gamero, it's his birthday today, I think. So, you know, maybe get someone like him.
Riyad Mahrez?
Riyad Mahrez.
That might be the first birthday shout out we've had on the podcast.
Yeah, no, it is,
if you're listening, Kevin.
We did it in this podcast.
It definitely is. I'm going to pin you down. You think Barca just going to cruise La Liga?
Oh, cruise. I mean, they like Maka says, 21-0 in the last four games. They had the most absurd. The fixture list was so weirdly stacked where basically all the hard games were at the start of the fixture list. Because in Spain, you play all 19 teams, and then you play the same run of fixtures again. And the first half of that run for Barcelona was so stacked with all the hard games, the back end was a lot easier. And basically, Barca's had that really difficult run right after the international break.
Mm-hmm.
Hard games, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, and then Real Sociedad, who they always struggled against away from home, Valencia. So they struggled. But now they've got the easy games against weaker sides. They're playing Granada. Granada just got confirmed their status in the Liga for next season. They beat Sevilla, a secondary, so Sevilla B side, basically 4-1 at the Ramos Sanchez Pizjuan. So they'll have no fear, but they're not a very good team. And Barcelona will really look to take. I mean, they just destroyed Espanyol. They really just killed them, and you know, they'll do the same to Granada probably. So it's all but certain. Then they've got the Copa Del Rey final after that, so they could still do the domestic double, which no one has retained. The domestic double in Spain since 1954.
Well, there you go. It could be a great season for Barcelona. Great James, season. Any arguments with Barca winning the Liga?
No, I thought even like 3 weeks ago that it was going to be theirs. They just had to win all their games, and they're very much capable of doing that, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's even like when Messi wins the Golden Boot every year, even when he's not the best season. Barca are just the best team. They just are, so they deserve it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, there was always Luis Suarez has really had an amazing season. I think it's always answered the question. Everyone's like, what would happen if Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi played together? Like, well, this season shows you what would happen. Luis Suarez is basically doing Cristiano Ronaldo things, scoring bucket loads of goals, scoring hat tricks. You know, it's the 60th minute. Your team is winning 3-0. Normally, people just passing the ball. He's like, no, I want a goal. chasing things down, scoring tap-ins and over-celebrating. Everyone's like, just calm down, man. We're 4-0 up already. It's no need to be
just,
so happy.
Just calm down.
But, you know, he's added a real bite. Yeah, so that was good. He's added a real bite to Barcelona. And
we've done it.
Yeah. You know, I feel so bad.
Let's end that link there. finally, to close off the pod, ask Squawker Talker at Dominic Prince has asked the pod thoughts/opinions on St. Jacob's Park as a venue for the Europa League final, and how do Liverpool go about beating Sevilla? Quick note on this, if you're not in the loop, St. Jacob's Park is the venue for the Europa League final. It's Basel's home stadium. It's got 38,500 capacity. But because of the corporate allocation of tickets that you always get with UEFA, there's only, 9,500 tickets being made available to Liverpool fans?
Absolute joke.
It's going to be a very strange atmosphere, isn't it, James?
Yeah, it's bizarre. In the UK, there are 19 stadiums bigger than where the Europa League final has been held. Just in the UK. It might help to Liverpool's advantage, like a bit more of an intimate atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
The pitch is quite close to the stands. But it's a strange decision. Everyone says it every year. Why do you need all these corporate seats? It makes no sense, does it? No, they don't even get rid of them all, do they?
It's a real shame as well, because with Liverpool and Sevilla, you have two sets of fans that are raucous.
Yeah.
The atmosphere is going to be incredible. Anyway, even with 9,000, they'll make it sound great. But if those two teams had got, even with the 34,000 stadium, if those two sides had gotten the majority of the seats, that would have been an incredible atmosphere. Really phenomenal stuff.
Why don't they get a blimp?
A blimp.
Yeah, you know, you ever seen those experiences you can have where you and your mates go and sit on a table and they raise it on a big balloon. You have like your meal, like a few like feet
like a red letter day thing.
Why don't they get a massive blimp and just put all the executives on there and hover it over the pitch? They could sell more tickets for the corporate. So, extra money. You can eat above the game. Glass floors.
Eat above the game.
Yeah, they should sign me up. I'll get it all sorted for UEFA. But if they just give the rest of the tickets to the fans. Yeah.
What if they drop a Volovan on James Milner?
There'll be a net. Throw a net underneath it. It'll be fine. Although James Milner might
header it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How do Liverpool beat Sevilla, James? How do they do that?
You have to start Sturridge. You just have to. His pace is crucial. He's just so clever off the ball. He makes the same run 9 times in a game, and the 10th one you'll pick him out with, and he'll score. We don't quite have the players with the vision to pick him out all the time. He's a bit of a head of what our midfield's capable of, but. Firmino, it's funny, he was talked about as flop of the season back in December, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he's technically outstanding. He's got 17. He's been directly involved in 17 league goals in the Premier League for Liverpool.
He was so good against Germany, more than any
other Liverpool player. And we've got players coming into real form at the minute. Like Emre Can is just bossing games.
Mm.
He was awesome against Villarreal. He's just so aggressive. Just like actually using his size. You can see why people thought he was a centre half earlier in his career, because he's just
big, just
so good in the air. He's just aggressive in the tackle. Joe Allen's in excellent form. Whenever he plays, he contributes something to the team. The fullbacks look in better form going forward than I've seen them at any point this season. Nathaniel Clyne's looking like the player we actually signed off Southampton, not this guy who's just coasting along for 3 months.
Yeah,
just got to replicate what we've been doing. Just get the atmosphere going, because the form's there and the players are there.
Mo, I mean, Liverpool, Klopp's Liverpool just seem to get better the bigger the occasion,
yeah,
haven't they?
It's, I mean, look, you know, I said Dortmund would beat them. They beat Dortmund. I said Villarreal would beat them. They beat Villarreal.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring that up, but you got that so wrong.
Yellow submarine or something, wasn't it? With nuclear bombs? Or...
Yes, it was, you know. I mean, I got it completely wrong. But Liverpool just, you know, they just defy expectation continuously. They should... You know, on paper, should have lost to United. They were outplayed United. Should have lost to Dortmund. Should have been thrashed by Dortmund. Outplayed Dortmund. Deserved to beat them. You know, should have lost to Villarreal, really. Outplayed Villarreal completely. It was they were so good at Anfield against Villarreal. I mean, they were just never in the game, the Yellow Submarine. Emre Can was outstanding. Roberto Firmino, dynamic. Even Kolo Touré didn't look really terrible, which was incredible. You know,
he's been excellent this season.
Dejan really Lovren was just a wall. Suddenly it's like, oh, wait, yeah, that's why we paid 20 million quid for him. You know?
Right.
It actually looks like the money we paid for these players, they underperformed so much, we've just devalued them all massively in our head. So Ad Milano was 26 million. We've all just mentally gone, yeah, he's a £12 million player. And now he's actually stepped up his game to the extent where you're actually thinking, oh, finally they're showing the sort of pre-Liverpool form that made you pay 26 million
it's
for
coaching.
Made you pay 20 million for Lovren.
Mm.
It's on top of coaching, it's just they've got their confidence. Like Klopp went absolutely nuts when Lovren won a slide tackle. He's like,
this is what I was saying about Leicester next season. The coaching quality in the Premier League, which has always been kind of iffy, is now going to take a huge leap forward next season, and that's going to make it's going to make the world of difference, I think, in Europe. I think that was for the years, the Premier League has struggled since the Fergie, Rafa's Liverpool, Fergie's Man United, the Chelsea team Mourinho built, since they fell apart, and since Wenger's last great team with Cesc in it. Since that, you know, the coaching and the English sides in Europe has not really been good enough. And I think next season, with the new coaches that are coming into the Premier League, that's going to change, and that's going to make a big difference in Europe. Maybe not immediately, but in 2 years, maybe. It'll make a huge difference. And, I mean, you're already seeing it with Vera. Look at what... He's been there for, 6 months? Look how good Liverpool are now compared to how just awful they were before. You know, I mean, look, I backed them to lose. And they're going to beat Sevilla, probably.
Sevilla are going to win the Europa League.
It's just going to happen. It doesn't matter if Sevilla even boss the game. Liverpool will find a way to win. They just... That is.
Well, Dom, I hope that answers your question. I think it does. It really does, anyway. Well, fantastic. Thanks very much to our guests, Mo, Greg, James. You've been brilliant. It's been so good.
You've been good too, Nick.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Thanks a lot. we're going to leave you now with Andrea Bocelli singing Ness and Dorma at the King Power Stadium. Yeah.